If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Even if we are intelligent and we have the information, why are we not getting results? Why is only 5, 10% people getting to their goals and the 90% people are not? The answer is the mindset. And if we go down, it would be limiting beliefs and fears.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
KP is a high-performance coach who helps motivated real estate entrepreneurs create more income and impact by aligning their thoughts, emotions, and actions. He has mastered the art of getting results by combining techniques from Tony Robbins. I don't know how to say this guy's name. What's his name? Wim Hof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't want to butcher it, but there it is. And Dr. Joe Dispenza. His unique program will give you the clarity, confidence, and the strategy you need to achieve your goals faster and create an edge. His achievements include earning an accelerated Doctor of Pharmacy degree while learning English, building a multi-million dollar rental portfolio, starting with $8,000 and raising over $10 million for his multifamily syndication business, and growing a senior care business by a factor of 3 in just 2 years. That's a lot, Katon. Oh my goodness. Wow. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, Sam. I'm very excited to talk today with you.
Absolutely. The same questions I ask everyone who comes on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there?
Okay. So, you know, originally I'm an immigrant from India. I came to this country, I'm learning English, got my doctor of pharmacy. And then I just realized that my values weren't really getting that freedom to be exercising my current position as a pharmacist. And I wanted to create another income stream. So real estate just made more sense. Slowly, I got involved into real estate, rentals, flipping, all. But eventually, I realized that passive and scale are important questions for me to answer. And syndication model made more sense for me on that side.
What year did you come over from India?
Yeah, I came in 2006, so about 15 years ago.
Okay. Very cool. You've accomplished a lot in 15 years. And are you still a pharmacist or have you exited that career?
So I left pharmacy about 6, 7 years ago, but I still have the license active.
Sure. Yeah, that's one of those things. Those are hard earned and tough to give up.
Yeah,
absolutely. So you got in, you figured out, at what point in time did you figure out that real estate was something that you needed to get into? What year might have that been?
Yeah, so I realized that with real estate, as you know, there's so much flexibility, right? You could be a passive investor and keep doing your job. You could be a little more active. You could be full-time. There are so many avenues to get more involved with it. So I really like that flexibility to try things and explore opportunities and get feedback and use that feedback to develop the strategy, right? So originally, I got into rentals. In rentals, there's not a whole lot going on. You could continue to keep doing your job, right? So to speak, it's not like a full-time. Yes, there are management responsibilities and things like that. You could have a handyman management company. That's how I started and I grew the portfolio. But then as I got into it, I realized that for me, it's important to live my values of freedom, creativity, innovation, entrepreneurship, and these things don't match up. And even if they give me $1 million year and ask me, you come in when you want, you go when you want and drink coffee, would I do this job? And the answer was no, because I'd rather just do something that I'm excited about. What's the point of just only making money? It's very important to make money, but feeling that fulfillment piece as well. And then that started kind of opening more doors into possibilities for me.
Right. And I mean, did you come over to the States with the idea that maybe someday you'd get into real estate, or is it something that you learned about once you got here?
Wow, that's a great question. I didn't really came that much with the idea. My goal here was learning English, getting settled here, getting that pharmacy at an accelerated pace. And I got done with all that. And then I realized, okay, this is not the whole picture. There must be something else to this. And that's when I discovered real estate.
How many single family rentals did you get up to before you decided that there was another way?
not that many, only three single family rentals, and realized I need to do 3-unit, 5-unit deals. I started doing those. And then I realized, okay, that's not going to be enough to scale. And also, I'm more of an analytical person. I understand numbers better and I understand management piece. So I came up with the syndication model versus me being active and fixing properties or being more boots on the ground, which is not really my strength, so to speak, or something that I enjoy either. So,
Right. And so then you decided that, hey, I'm going to get involved in multifamily. Was that your next real estate step? Okay,
yes.
Cool. What did that look like?
Yeah. So it was, you know, a little scary in the beginning. It's like, okay, I don't know, you know, what I'm doing in this space. I understand, you know, intellectually what to do, but raising money, talking to people and bringing investors on board and, you know, sponsors, and there are so many moving pieces. But I also knew that this could mean so much more for me down the road. And that's why I started raising capital, building the brand. And if I choose to, I could always do my own deals some point down the road. But I realized I like this niche model, being very focused, because I realized too many people spread their effort thin. They are doing so many things, which doesn't really get us. We got to learn to say no to things and be okay and uncomfortable with those opportunities that could be really big down the road, and just kind of focus on one or two things that are in front of us.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Absolutely right. You mentioned raising capital and building a brand. I mean, those two seem to go hand in hand, but out of the gate, what did you focus on first?
Yeah, so out of the gate, I knew that at the end of the day, there's the hard truth of real estate, which is capital. It doesn't matter what you buy, where you buy, what you do with it, or who you buy with it. You'll always need capital. And that was a lightning struck. So I was like, I need to figure that out. Now, how do we get going? The important piece would be to communicate with investors, right? Why I'm passionate, building my own brand story and my personal story. Why am I passionate about real estate? You know, what are the risks, the returns? Why my strategy in current time? What are the downsides? All of those things, and mastering that art of conversation at the end of the day, and overcoming those limiting belief voices. Hey, I don't want to reach out to my uncle. I'm going to appear to be salesy, right? Or whatever. I've already raised $300,000 now, but what do I do now, right? So,
yeah, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. What was it like raising whatever your first amount raised from an investor was? What was that first investor that came on board with you?
Yeah, so the first $500,000 raise was challenging because I didn't really have the knowledge of, you know, having a good call structure with the investors and what to look out for and how to communicate, how to get commitments and things like that. So it was challenging, but I must have gone through 20, 30 phone calls. I was committed. I knew that at the end of the day, to get results, you need commitment. When we are committed, everything will fall into place. We could learn new skills. We could find the right connection. We could get the strategies. But if we are merely interested in doing things, it doesn't really go that far. So it was that commitment that got me through the hurdle that, you know, one of my coach who was trained by Tony directly taught me that years ago.
Right. And you know, 20 or 30 phone calls to raise $500,000. I mean, that's a lot of no, but it's not that many phone calls.
Yes, but so 20 or 30 was to get to my first investor, basically. Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right. So that paints a different picture. Yeah. That paints a different picture. Yeah, okay. So that's a lot of phone calls, and that's a lot of no and rejection, you know, along the way, or not even necessarily rejection, but maybe not yet. How did you overcome the, well, not yet, when you knew that you had a deal that you had to get across the finish line?
Yeah. So, you know, what I learned, the number one mistake that a lot of real estate entrepreneurs make is they don't get the soft commitments. They don't get ready before the deal. Everybody just thinks, you know, and that's what I teach my clients, is don't wait for the deal and then the money's going to follow. That's a risky business and it's going to create some stress. So before you even have a deal, educate your investors, build your platform, nurture them so you could get some soft commitment, maybe 50%, 30%, 70%. And there's some comfort, because the truth of the matter is, without the trust nobody's really going to invest, right? It could be the best market, best deal, but if I don't trust you as a person, you know, you are very less likely to invest, and that cannot be cultivated overnight sometimes. So it helps to kind of have the conversations when you don't even have the deal, because now the investor's not under pressure, you are not under pressure to perform. And so the first one was challenging because you had to keep going and going and things like that, and eventually got delayed, but I made it to the finish line, but I learned my lesson. And before the next deal, I started doing these things. So it's much easier.
What are some ways that you recommend people nurture their relationships with investors before they have a live deal?
Yeah, so good question. There are a lot of ways. And again, I'm a big believer in picking something that will be unique to us, because I'm a big proponent of strategy. We all are different individuals, right? We have different skill sets. We like different things. So for somebody, a meetup might be a good way to nurture. For someone else, meetup is just going to be boring. Turn them off. It's not their jam. They might just write creative newsletters and send every other week. That could be their nurturing. For somebody else, it could be podcast. It could be any of those things. It could be webinars. So those are different channels and tactics, but the goal comes down to what you're comfortable with, what you enjoy doing, that you'll do it regardless, right? And then you employ those things to nurture those relationships.
I like that. I like that, because it oftentimes feels like you have to be all things to all people, and that's really impossible. You know, so you finding the thing that really you enjoy and makes you come alive that you can consistently do. It's easy. It's easy for me to have these conversations over a podcast, right? It's very difficult for me to write a newsletter. It's like,
yes.
My teeth out. My gosh, no. So yeah, there you go. Case in point. That's really fantastic. And so are you an active investor, or do you invest in other syndications?
Yeah, so I still actively raise money. I also have a registered rep license that I'm affiliated with the FINRA broker dealer. So my business model is to support passive investors, educate them, and bring them into the deals I'm raising money. And a lot of those deals, I put my money as well. So right now I'm raising for a multifamily fund where I'm an LP investor, and then I'm bringing more LP capital. That's one side of my business. And the other side is the coaching consulting.
Right. So let's dive into a couple pieces there. On when you're an LP with these, I'm curious about the regulations that surround this. And obviously you're not an attorney and you're not giving securities advice and all that. Yeah. We can just put all those disclaimers out here. Yeah. I'm just simply asking you what your understanding of it is.
Yeah.
But are you guys going in as a fund of funds then into these other investments, or are you guys just going in as LPs?
So for me, my model is very clean, because I've gone through a lot of hurdles. I've gone through 3 exams and getting the broker dealer and things like that. So for, let's say you are the sponsor and I have investor, they will be going directly into your deal, directly into the structure. So no fund of fund, no substructure, no money going all over the place. But I could get the compensation from you because I'm following the regulation, so to speak, and my broker dealer's reviewing the deals and things like that. So I don't need to worry about creating the other funds and things like that.
Right. Understand. What is it as it pertains to a broker dealer that makes that arrangement? I mean, obviously it makes it attractive in the sense that there's just not that kind of, we're not doing this paperwork trail to make it compliant, right? Can you give me the kind of mechanics of what that looks like, percentage wise, breakdown? You know, I know it costs you money to be affiliated with a broker dealer.
Yes. So here's the thing, right? At the end of the day, for the passive investor, it doesn't change anything. So the passive investor, they invest with the sponsor Z directly, or they invest through me, they get the same return. They're not paying any fees or anything like that. I'm getting paid from the sponsor, but on top of that, I'm paying the registration fees and I'm giving a certain percentage compensation to the broker dealer. So my margins get compressed. And I have a lot of more legalities to deal with and things like that. But if I'm selling securities, this is the most compliant, the best way that's out there. And I had to make that business decision to go that way, basically.
Right. No, I understand. What is a typical broker dealer's cut?
Yeah, typically they work on an 80-20 model, plus, you know, registration fees and other soft costs and things like that. So
Right. That's interesting. It would seem like that's a good deal for the broker.
It depends, because they have to do a lot of compliance. They need to have compliance staff, and it gets very, very deep. Like every single of my email, it gets copied to them directly. They have to review every single email I send, my marketing materials, websites, decks. It gets very, very detailed.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm quite familiar. I've had more FINRA licenses over the years than I've cared to probably talk about on this podcast. But I never made it to the broker dealer side of this equation just from that perspective alone. Because I mean, your level of your paperwork trail is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, God bless you on that. That's beyond what my pay grade wants to support. So I guess talk to us, you bring investors in, you place them directly with the sponsors.
Yeah.
How do you vet your sponsors, and how does your broker dealer vet your sponsors? I mean, and I guess that's two questions. I'll ask a third one. Does your broker dealer even know anything about real estate?
Yes. So three questions. Good, great questions, by the way. We could talk about it for hours, but I'll try to, summarize. So for me, when I look at sponsors, I look at the holistic view. So first is, what is their team? What is their track record? What is their strategy? What is their execution plan on that strategy, right? Doing variance reports and things like that. And I have my team, I have an underwriter on my team that'll do a lot of that legwork, so to speak, right? So because just a sponsor finding a good deal in a good market's not enough. You need to make sure their operation is run well, because otherwise, if they are going to have too many deals and they might not be able to focus on asset management, what would happen? And naturally, in the world of real estate, business plan, when it hits the road, something else happens. We all know that. So how capable is the infrastructure to handle your investment? And I'm investing there too, right? So I went through all of those things. That's number one. And then the broker dealer, they look for the securities compliance thing. So broker dealers are not able to say, hey, I approve you should invest here, or I disapprove, but their job is to kind of make sure that the investment structure is fair to the investors. They are making proper disclosures and following all the SEC rules. And there's a lot of them, and a lot of issuers might not be following, because even some attorneys might not necessarily have that exposure to the securities, world in that sense. And then the broker dealer, that's a very good question. So my broker dealer does work with other real estate businesses. So they understand the syndication model. They understand Regulation D value at apartment building. So they know the averages, so to speak, to kind of have a formed opinion to be like, okay, this fits normal. I don't see anything in the structure that seems like red flag to me and things like that.
Right. Yeah, that's good. That's really good. Yeah, I was just curious. That answers a lot of great questions there. You've accomplished a lot in a short 15 years. Can you kind of walk us through mindset? I mean, that's coming to a new country, learning a new language while getting your pharmacy degree, then getting involved in multifamily, broker dealer license. Obviously, you're very intelligent, but even intelligence doesn't take you so far, or it can only take you so far. So talk to us about kind of where, what mindset and how you've really used that to leverage up.
Yeah. So, climbing mountains in 20 Fahrenheit with Wim Hof, wearing no shirt, to doing deep meditation retreat with Dr. Joe Dispenza and Tony Robbins and all that, I really, really went deep into the psychology, because I was perplexed by that question, is that even if we are intelligent and we have the information, why are we not getting results? Why is only 5, 10% people getting to their goals and the 90% people are not? The answer is the mindset. And if we go down, it would be limiting beliefs and fears. Those are the big components, and we are not conscious of it a lot of the times. So what happens is, deep down, we might not be aware, but the belief is that, hey, maybe I grew up in this neighborhood and I don't have what it takes to get here, right? Maybe other people, they could make it happen, but maybe not me, because I have 3 kids and I just don't have enough time. So those beliefs basically don't let you take the responsibility, right? They give the power away, and those beliefs kind of keep you in a limited story. So to give you an example, when I left pharmacy and I bought a senior care business, which I knew nothing about, and I had no money to buy that business, I already had all these student loans from pharmacy, and I had another failed venture. So it was not a good time, if you think about it. Everything was stacked against, but I asked myself, am I going to believe in the limitation of what had happened, or I'm going to look into the possibilities, right? So asking good questions and understanding yourself, and we all are different. Somebody might have some fear about losing money. Somebody might have something related to time. But the general point is we have to pay attention. And I used coaches. They really challenged my beliefs. They stretched me and be like, why are you doing this? Why only raise $1 million, right? And then I was like, yeah, I feel comfortable there. 2 million seems a lot, but why is it a lot, right? Being challenged, and then we learn and we grow, and then the cycle continues.
Right. No, I think that's fantastic. That's fantastic. What were some of the ways and things that you did to uncover your limiting beliefs?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I highly recommend two things to everyone. Number one would be to set 1 hour or 2 hours every single week. Go to a spot you're undisturbed. You don't have your laptop or anything like that. And ask very, very important questions. Okay, how did this week go? If my goal is to become active in real estate or buy more properties or become better at this, what action should I have taken? Did I took those actions? No. Or yes, where could have improved. Really looking yourself outside of your life, and then you are going to get some insight. It might not happen right away, and it's not a time to beat down yourself, so to speak, like, wow, I'm not doing anything, but it's really creating a space for insights to come, because otherwise, day-to-day life, the laptops and social media and family and everything, you just don't have that time to really sit back. So if you cultivate that every week, just 1 hour, what can I do next week that will move me 1 inch or even a centimeter close to my goal? Okay, it is reading 3 articles. Let me try to figure that out somehow next week. Micro stuff instead of the bigger goals, so to speak. So that's one strategy for limiting beliefs. And no, to actually cultivate some awareness. And then the limiting beliefs, to become aware, you'll have to ask yourself, okay, I need to launch a podcast or I need to do this thing. Do I feel competent? Can I like learn the skills? The answer is yes. Then why am I not doing it? Like, it's very clear I could write these articles or buy this property. Why am I not doing it? There is some limiting belief hanging around, like if you uncover the onion layers, basically.
Right. No, that's great. I think that's great advice. Man, this has been action or jam-packed full of actionable information. So I do appreciate all your insights and everything we've talked about today. We're running out of time, so let's jump here into the final four. Final four questions are this. Number one is, what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
I would just say that absolutely believe in possibilities. Always ask yourself every day, every time, am I focusing on possibilities or am I focusing on limitations? Very simple question.
It's a great, great question. It's a tough one too. Number two is, when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
I'm actually doing another meditation retreat to go even deep into awareness next week for 4 days.
Wow, 4 days. Good for you. That's intense. That's intense. I look forward to hearing the feedback on that. Question number three is, when it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you are making the world a better place?
Yeah, I'm helping putting this water filtration systems in India. The kids, they don't get the clean water, and also working on, you know, getting some books, computers, things like that to, you know, support them with their education and everything.
Yeah, people don't realize the importance of clean water until you don't have it. And then when you don't have it, it's really the beginning. Like, you must have that to start. So good for you. That's super cool. KP, thanks for coming on today. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. You could go to Ketan Patel. That's Ketan Patel, Patel.com. I do have a free 5 pillars of high performance guide for anybody that's interested. And for those of the listeners who are ready to draw a line in the sand and they want to take their game to the next level, they could click the take action button, fill a form, happy to do a one-on-one strategy session with them. And also, the website has YouTube videos on high performance strategies and capital raising and everything. So jam-packed with information and insights.
Awesome. KB, thanks so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity, man. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor
and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.